Greetings. This is the automatically deleted husband. Obviously, automatically deleted again. And what a joy. I got a postcard today. What is the difference between Shadi, Shada, and myself? I love you. I love you. I love you. Your man. This is to my wife. And obviously, return to sender. Shadi, Shada, that gentleman right there. It's been on my wall for years. What's the difference? He lost his family because a missile hit his home. Except for the fact that my family's still alive. Our circumstances are basically identical. Good news! The event scheduled for yesterday happened. I am more than pleased. The two gentlemen arrived, and we spoke for a hair over a half hour. And it was pleasant. No baseball bats involved. it was a pleasant dialogue. And I don't think what they got from me is the norm of what they get. Because my guess is, one, for somebody to accept the invitation to come, some would be willing because they want to know more. And maybe open to what they're offering, and others may be "I'm gonna get you" kind of people. But obviously, I tried to be gracious, inviting, but pointing to the truth. And it was interesting. And again, part of the way I tried to do that is they gave me, they gave me the book. And of course, when they're here, they left some an additional item, which the Articles of the Faith, which is the 13 funda, you know, it's their synopsis, sort of. They have their 13 points. And so, which is helpful to have. So we did engage. And I was pleased that we did it. I don't think anybody changed their mind in anything. However, what surprised me is in the exchange, I said, I could give you an email. And they gave me their email address. That surprised me. But only to a degree. What happened was, I asked them, "Well, can I send you what I wrote?" And they said, "Yes." I said, "But our email address is a long number." And I says, "Well, why don't you go ahead, and because it's easy, send a short one to me, and then I'll have it." So John at Kozlowski.org, that's pretty easy, And right then, that oh, really? Because obviously, to have an email address like that is out of the norm. But they did, and then they got some responses. And some response. I sent a couple that night and one this morning. And I think basically I'm finished unless they come back to the table. Because I tried to be inviting on that. They did offer a, because... one of the things I thought was so fascinating, because they look at, I ask specifically, God the Father and Jesus Christ as physical entities. And, I said, I'm sorry, because, and then I ask, and of course they look at Satan as Jesus' brother. And that, I said, okay, does that mean there's God the Mother? And the answer surprised me, because I don't think I've heard this before. It says, yes, but we typically don't mention her out of respect. And I was, it's kind of like, wow, really? No, we have some fundamental differences. But, they were willing to engage me and speak frankly. The other thing, one of the things they, I said, no, quoted the obvious, no one has seen the Father. And they pointed, which I was impressed, you know, for young guys to do this, they were prepared. They pointed to Acts 7 and brought it up on the screen, you know, on my 40-inch Bible. I use King James out of respect for them. But he, being full of the Holy Ghost, looked up steadfastly into heaven and saw the glory of God and Jesus standing in the right hand of God, and said, Behold, I see the heavens open and the Son of Man standing in the right hand of God. And they said, See, right there, they saw the Father. I thought that was really interesting I was actually impressed. And of course, I responded, you stated this was visibly seeing a physical God, the Father. The word saw is eido, which is to see or to know. And I've actually reviewed this because there are several words that we would translated about seeing, because there's seeing with the eye, there's seeing with what you call the mind's eye, there's perceiving and so forth. And a lot of times the words cross over as opposed to specifically seeing with the eye. But see is threeable, whatever, which is to behold or to see. In other words, there's saw and see. In other words, I can, this is something that is comes to my conscience. Considering the context of the heavens opened, it suggests that this was not something to be physically seen no more than a few hundred feet away, but in heaven. So what he saw was via the mind's eye, not visually. Plus, standing or histomai is not just physically standing, but to be put in place, and then to add on or ek, where something proceeds from. Jesus, who proceeds from the Father, not physically standing next to him, or it is Jesus. So, when you look, see, one of the things that concerns me, and this is one of the reasons why I so much want to make the tools simple for someone like me who doesn't speak the language to quickly see, oh, okay, the word see or saw or whatnot is there. What is it made of? What is that word in the Greek made from? So, because then the basis of what it is, and what I'm perceiving from the English may be two different things. So you can see where you can perceive where you can get the idea that you physically see God the Father. But my point that I made to them is Jesus said, no one has seen the Father. And so either Jesus was wrong, or their argument, this happened after Jesus said that. Which, again, I was impressed that they offered that. But no, I would suggest no one has seen the Father except the one who proceeds from the Father. Man standing in the right hand of God, someone who proceeds from. Again, because I have studied the histomai, the idea to stand or to put in place. It is not the idea of to physically stand in all cases. So that was important. So I was impressed enough that they were able to contend on that, but obviously I responded with some depth, hopefully, to show where I think they were wrong. But the other thing that was so important, because this is something I was aware of, because I've looked into this before, and it's the idea of the burning of the bosom, that the reason that Mormonism is true because you have that burning in the bosom. I wrote them this morning a fairly substantial, I would suggest fairly substantial email and touch in two areas. I'll put the text and online, but I want to read it because I want to explain some of the things. Gentlemen, there are two points I ask you to consider. First relates to the often quoted Doctrine and Covenants 9:8. And you notice the reason is, I've got it. and they actually used it. Okay. But behold, I say unto you that you must study it out in your mind. Then you must ask me if it be right. And if it is right, I will cause that your bosom shall burn within you. Therefore, you shall feel that it is right. The way I've described it, that is effectively the John 3:16 of the Mormon faith. It is their go-to verse. And like I say, in my review, including some review again today, that's their go-to verse. It's this idea of, you know, I ask and I really feel it strongly. In our conversation yesterday, I said, what's the difference between that confidence that you have versus the confidence of the Muslim, the atheist, or the drug addict, where he gets that burning in the bosom? What's the difference? And their response was, well, you know, because the difference is the results are eternal. Well, that's important. And we're, you know, because again, I would suggest, I used it and they did respond on the idea, but there's no difference between that and a drug addict. I feel that need. And I think that's what they have. I go on. My guess is that you can quote this from memory, but what does the Bible say? Please consider Jeremiah 17:9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? If you are trusting in a feeling, the Lord makes it clear that our feelings or our heart will lead us astray. These are examples from last night. These are the examples last night of the Muslim, Buddhist, atheist, or drug addict that is a similar burning in the bosom. The burning might feel good, but please consider Matthew 7:22. Many will say unto me that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name have done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto thee, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. I have great respect for the conviction of the suicide bomber who believes that the Quran states he'll be received in paradise because of his deeds. He's living his conviction to the point of costing him his life, but his conviction, or burning in his bosom, will cost him his eternity. He was deceived. Are you right because it feels right to you, or because it is the truth? There is only one truth. Jesus, as seen in John 14:6, Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. You know, see, there is no idea of my truth. I am not the definition of truth. Jesus is the definition of truth. He is the embodiment of truth. And I can't make something up. I can't feel so strongly about it to make it true, because I am not God. I am his creation. I must yield to him. And I'm really concerned that what I saw yesterday is, again, no different from the Muslim or the drug addict. They're so tied to something that they believe in with their whole heart, their deceitfully wicked heart, like mine. And it's going to cost them, unless the Lord's grace will be in their lives. And I hope that I showed them love by interacting with them and trying to speak the truth to them. But there was a second point. The second point is that I have observed the strategic techniques used by the Mormon Church, such as the missionary program you're involved in. In many respects, it is a rite of passage. It is more of a training ground for you rather than those you meet. My understanding is that for the Mormon, especially those who have grown up in it, it's not the training program to get somebody new, but someone who's already kind of really involved, typically. It's a two-year program, I think, and it's usually done, I don't know if it's late teens, early 20s, or both, or whatever. Anyway, young. And these are the guys that will go, again, for domestically and overseas, in order to be the guys that you see walking down the streets, so forth, going house to house and things of that nature, like I met yesterday or Tuesday. And they have the black badge with their name on it, and they call themselves Elder such and such, which obviously is a misnomer, because a young guy is not an elder. This is just a play on words. But anyway, and so, but the idea of a rite of passage, they do this in order to end up with a more significant standing within the Mormon Church, because they have done this. It is kind of a badge of honor, you might say. And my suggestion is, the point is to a secondary degree to bring others into the faith. I suggest the primary point of this is to get people who are somewhat in the faith and hold them on. The analogy I thought of, because obviously it's something I've discussed many times, is the Brownstone operation. The most noted would be things like the Epstein affair what's her name? That's currently in prison. Epstein had the Lolita Express, the jet that would fly people to Pedophile Island, as it was known, to do some rather disgusting things. But in doing that, it gets people in. The Brownstone operation is the idea of a place where you get people in of power in order to give them services, and you now know and can let them know that you know of what was done for them. So you've got them. It goes back to quote I do from, I've used several times from All the President's Men, from Charles Colson. It was the thing on his wall. When you got them by the balls, their hearts and minds will follow. And that's exactly what a Brownstone operation is, or what Epstein did. The issue is, it's also done on smaller scales, locally and things of that nature. But in a very real sense, I would suggest, without maybe the sex aspect to it, I assume, it's the same kind of thing. I've got you in. You're now invested in this. It's the same argument that's used for wearing the mask, because we've got you in as a follower of the COVID hysteria. Got you with a vaccine, so you're in the club. Don't violate the club. It is the same kind of thing, using different methods, but it's to get you into the club. Now that you're into the club, the club that I was in, that I got fired over, is we make a lot of money as defense contractors or other things, this medical stuff. We make a lot of money. Don't rock the boat. It's the same thing. But by getting you in, you now have, they have a little something. Yes, you did this. You must have believed. So you're in. You're part of the group. Live as part of the group. Anyway, there are numerous techniques used to keep you from having an in-depth relationship with those you meet, such as me. You're constantly moved around, so there's no time to build a relationship and go beyond the surface ideas to an in-depth dialogues. Even the email address you provided is designed to be there and gone. You're given the title of elder, but you simply are not, as described in the Bible. It is a way to hide your identity and keep you from long-term relationships. And I I suggest, well, that was a mouthful, and I suggest that's exactly what it's done. They keep people from establishing, because, well, again, I met two gentlemen Tuesday. Two gentlemen came. One was one of the gentlemen I met on Tuesday. One was already a replacement. They constantly move around. They change them out. They don't develop relationships with each other. They can't develop relationships with people they meet, like me. In doing that, their only thing that they can draw on is their relationship to the Mormon church, the institution. So that's what holds them. In a sense, this just came to mind, but I do think it's related. There is the idea of, you know, isolation, which is torture. Prison cells are frequently done that way. You isolate somebody, and now their mentality changes in so many ways, and their ability to relate is very much impacted. And I think to a degree there may be some of that, because I have no long-term relationships right now. The person I meet today, I may know for 2 weeks, and then it's different people again. So what do I grab onto? My institution. And, I think that's a problem. But, however, as I've made unambiguous, my name is John Kozlowski. My email address is rather easy with john@kozlowski.org. Considering I've owned the kozlowski.org domain for over 25 years, it is clear evidence that I've been in the field for a long time. For even a longer time, I've been a student of the Bible, and now that I am 66 years old, I am by definition an elder, as seen in the Bible. You might find that I constantly refer to 2 Timothy 4:2. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and doctrine. The all long-suffering is essentially stating that you never give up. I promise you that I will not give up on you. I don't think they get that kind of response from people. My strategy here was I gave him my email address. We did exchange email addresses. Obviously, my email address is easy to remember if you can spell Kozlowski. And it opens the door to them saying, when I'm private. Or years from now, maybe I'll contact this guy because there's something fishy, whatever. Therefore, if any time, now or in the future, as long as I have breath, feel free to contact me to engage in serious dialogue, not fluff. At least one of us is wrong. Do you have the courage of your conviction to engage me seriously? Do you see that this is living out the commandment from Leviticus 19:18, to love thy neighbor as thyself? It is worth reading more of that passage for completeness. Leviticus 19:17. Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people. But thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Respectfully, John Kozlowski. One of the points was, in our dialogue, they did bring up the, you know, our two commandments, you know, love the Lord and love your neighbor. I don't know. There's a real possibility. They don't know where that commandment comes from. They may have heard it from Jesus in the Gospels. It may be in here. I haven't read it all yet. But obviously, the source of that statement is Leviticus 19:18. And, you know, again, the thing that I find, two things are important. One that I find very important that was not mentioned is the I am the Lord. That is the authority of the statement. Because there's so much stuff in the Old Testament and the New that is like recording a history, somebody else. You know, the one that I use frequently is Nathan saying to David, I want to build the temple. And Nathan says, go for it, and Lord bless you, and whatnot. And then the Lord came to Nathan and said, thus says the Lord. So the go for it from Nathan was not a command of God. Nor was your son will build it. It's not command your son to build it. There's a difference there, but that's a whole other issue. But I wanted to put it in context, and the reason I put in verse 17, thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor. This is not thou shalt not, this shall. Do not hate your brother in your heart. You certainly reprove your fellow. Do not permit him to permit sin on him. In other words, literally, correct your brother, which I would suggest it's what Matthew 18, Luke 16, and whatnot that I've anyway. It's a big deal. Kind of the bottom line is, because I asked Chris today, because I wanted, I need to know. These are not just targets that came to my door. These are people. These were two men that came to my door. Human beings created in the image of God. They're no different than I am. And I wanted to make sure that I loved my neighbor as myself. Again, who is your neighbor? The story of the Good Samaritan. Good Samaritan. Oh, yeah, like that man. Well, he's right there in the back of the picture. Mr. Tamal, a literal Good Samaritan. He paid with his life for it. Go USA. But anyway, I want to look at these people as people. And I want people to come to me and correct me where I'm wrong. And, it is... It is the idea, I had it here. Didn't I have it here? Yeah. The idea about the 2 Timothy 4 that wasn't in this email. The idea of never giving up. So when somebody comes to me, in the case of this Mormon missionary, they're in an environment that precludes long-term relationships. It is an imposed giving up. It doesn't strengthen them. It actually, I think, weakens them. I want to strengthen them to trust in their Creator. I want to be, well, it is like the exchange on the Acts 7:55. To be able to say, okay, they brought up something, they brought up a rational argument about no one has seen the Father. And they said, well, but how about this? And I wanted to provide a rational response because I am convinced, and I will contend on this, because I did go over that with him. Because I asked them, and I don't know if I ever got an answer, do they look at the universe as self-existing? And I don't think they ever gave me a straight answer on that. Because I think they look at, I think they look at as God the Father and God the Mother within the creation, having their sons by what we might consider normal means, Jesus and Satan, and then of course I don't know enough about this yet, but somehow my understanding is, if they do well or whatever, they effectively take that role on a different planet, from what I understand. But I think within the same universe. I think that's correct. I need to study that more. But I would suggest, as I tried to express yesterday, it's hogwash. Because God the Father, the reason no one has seen him, one, because he's spirit, he's outside of creation. I did point out yesterday that in the beginning is the creation of time itself, and there wasn't 5 minutes before. So time itself and the universe itself exist because of the command of God and is sustained because of God. This I did point out to them yesterday, and I don't think there's any response to them. But it is not God the Father and God the Mother outside of creation having their kids and whatnot and say, okay, now let's make creator universe to put them in. Not at all. Nor is it they're in the self-existing universe and they do all these things. No, there's only one God. And he is outside the universe, creates the universe, which includes the creation of time, and steps into the universe, as we see in Genesis 1, and sees it. Jesus Christ is the one who's seen it. He is God who has stepped into the universe. And as the Spirit hovered over the waters, the Holy Spirit. So it's all there in Genesis 1. And I would suggest it's consistent. And it flies in the face of the Mormon doctrine. So I do think having an understanding of that, having an understanding that, well, I did quote the Acts 17, we live and move and exist because of God, not because we're self-existing. Definitely not because of random chance, but because God said so. And then, of course, there I don't know if it was mentioned yesterday, it may have been mentioned Tuesday, the thing about the sovereignty of God. Because I think if I got this right, they look at God as all-knowing in that he knows what's going to happen, not that he's decreed what will happen. Whereas I think the Bible is clear. He decrees the future. The reason I'm making this call right now and recording this video is because it was decreed by God before time began. And you say, well, that takes away my free choice. No, it doesn't. No. That's a whole long discussion itself. And I'm long already. I had two young Mormon elders visit me yesterday. And one of the great joys is I did have several email exchanges with my friend in Utah today about this. And it was a mutual celebration. He's asked for more dialogue. And he asked me what I think the foundation of Christianity is, and I was encouraged by that. But your closing thought, that I would have a friend in Tennessee no matter what the future brought, is truly touching sentiment. Thank you for sharing that feeling with me and being so vulnerable in it. May your day be blessed with joy, and may you have peace in knowing that I feel the same. You have a friend here, no matter what. That's what a follower of Christ should say, my wife, Jim Cross, Brenda Cranes, Chris Bitterman. My lady, I love you and I want you back.